Now, the final part of the story that Dr. Johnson said was the first book in the world for the knowledge it displays of the human heart, and he wasn't alone. Most critics regard Clarissa, The History of a Young Lady, as one of the greatest European novels. And it's also one of the longest, at around 1 million words. So far, Clarissa has fled from the cruel Lovelace, befriended by his erstwhile friend Belford and the kindly Mrs. Smith, and completely broken in body and spirit, she hopes for a reconciliation with her family. But Lovelace will never give up in his pursuit.
Clarissa. The History of a Young Lady by Samuel Richardson. Adapted in four parts by Hattie Naylor. Part 4. Freedom Regained.
How am I now humbled in the dust, the proud Clarissa Harlowe? Dear Anna, I write notes to you, then tear them up and lay them across the floor like snow across a barren island. I was arrogant, yes, arrogant, I believe. I offended my family and ran away with a tiger, and my father cursed me, and my father's curse has happened. This wicked house and my tiger have scrambled my mind, and I am quite alone. To live without kindness is a dreadful thing. These notes shall not reach you. I know not when my last letter did. They drugged me, I think. And with that, and then what followed, my mind wanders back to the ivy summer house with you, my only love. But do not think me worthy of friendship now, dear Anna, for I am worthy of nothing.
The 12th of October, 1748. Robert, Lord M is ill. Lady B and Charlotte are overwrought with worry. You must come quickly. You are relied upon as his sole male heir, and he is one of the few who has continued in their affections towards you through this terrible business. You must come immediately. They all await you. Belford.
Dear Jack.
She'll marry you now.
Hmm?
What else can she do? Them that have names and reputations to protect. You writing to Belford? You listening to me, Bob? I said she'll marry you now.
If I marry her.
You off to see Lord M on his deathbed?
In due course.
Going to collect your inheritance, Bob.
How is she, Dorcas?
She's dressing and she's coming down to talk to you, sir.
She eaten anything?
No.
Take her some soup. Put it outside her door for when she returns. Now, both of you leave me.
Come on, Dorcas. We're not wanted for the lovers' quarrel. Come on.
What is it?
Nothing. She just...
What?
She cries like she's dying. Inside. I can hear it from my room. It's like an animal in pain. I can't sleep.
Just go and fetch the soup, as I have bid you.
Good morning, Mr. Lovelace.
Will you sit?
You see before you, sir, the wretch whose preference you have rewarded with her destruction.
Clarissa, I have never intended...
Abandoned man, do not interrupt me. But tell me, if the corruption of my soul and the completion of my father's curse at your hands is to be the end of your barbarity, and having no friend to protect or save me from you, what further indignities do you and the accursed confederacy in this house intend to inflict upon me? Or am I now at liberty to dispose of myself as I please? Know that you have ruined me.
Ruined you, madam? The world need not know. The world is not...
Ruined in my own eyes. That is the same to me as if all the world knew. Let me leave. Your damage is complete. What right do you have to keep me here?
Have I not left you alone since? A lesser man would have continued.
A lesser man?
My very crime is your glory. My love and admiration for you has increased by what has passed. I am willing, madam, to court your returning goodwill and marry you. Let marriage be your forgiveness. We may still see many happy years together. Forgive me, my dearest life, this one time. A virtue so invincible.
Great and good God of heaven, give me patience to support myself. Forgive you!
Lady Betty, Charlotte, Captain Tomlinson, and your uncle await word. I have the license. Tomorrow, we may...
Lady Betty! Lady Betty, Charlotte, Captain Tomlinson, do you suppose that I believe any of those people to be real? Do you think I don't know that they are imposters? More of your diabolical associates, like this household, like Mrs. Sinclair, all your confederacy.
No, not at all. Lady Betty is...
And what is this house, Lovelace? Is this house what I fear it to be, the devil's own? Did you bring me to a place of... those... vile women! How can you have ever thought it love? What creature are you to call your feelings love? The ruin you have brought. You have taken my sense, my honour, my mind. For what? When I was once fond of you.
And can be again. Forgive me. Show me the virtue I have seen in your forgiveness. Show me the worth of women.
The worth of women? Do you believe I can forgive you?
I know it.
This was a test. You cripple a soul for a game, for your amusement.
I can believe true virtue exists in women if I know it exists in you. Then I can have faith. I can still be redeemed by your goodness.
I have no power to redeem you. God alone has the power to redeem. Your argument is with him, not with me. I never will be yours. Never. Do not doubt it. I ask again, am I to be kept prisoner here to sustain fresh injuries, or am I to be permitted to leave? Base wretch Lovelace, you shall never make me your wife. Never!
Robert, Lord M. seriously ill. Come immediately. John Belford.
A lady took a great fancy to a tiger. It was made a present to her when it was a cub. She fed it with her own hand, nursed it with tenderness, played with it without fear, and it was obedient to all her commands. And its tameness, as she used to boast, increased with its growth. So like a lapdog it would follow her about the house. But then one day, it fell upon the lady and tore her to pieces. And the lady said to the tiger, as it tore into her skin as she lay dying, "Why have you hurt me when I have only shown you care and fondness?" And the tiger said, "Because it is my nature." Now whose fault is that? The lady or the tiger?
She's gone mad. You better come. She's screaming out of one of the windows. Mrs. Sinclair.
Where?
In the kitchen.
No one can hear you anyway. Get down.
Help!
What's going
Help!
On?
Oh, we can't get her down.
There are railings. There's no way out.
She won't listen to us.
Tell her, Bob. Tell her.
Dearest, please.
Help! Somebody help
me. It won't
this screaming. I've got a reputation to keep up. I tell you, it won't do. Do something with your wife.
I am not his wife, as well you know.
Let me help you down.
Do not touch me, base man. Well, nor you, woman. Once my terror, always my dislike, but now my contempt.
Oh, what have I ever done to you, madam?
Mixed the preparation. Oh. Heated the milk that was my downfall.
What?
Making me half sensible for this man to take his fill and much more.
Never did I hear
that. Don't interrupt me, vile woman, who has perhaps been the ruin of hundreds of innocents, my fellow sisters. Do not doubt that I have friends who will demand retribution for your willful evil. I am a person of rank and fortune, and you will be ruined. Do not doubt it, woman. You will be ruined by your part in my betrayal.
Dearest, dearest love, please. Be calm. No one will harm you.
We've not done anything.
Equally vile niece, who did not come when I screamed for help, who did not come when I was forced. False friend. All of you are culpable here, and the law will find you and pursue you. Do not touch me.
Oh, Bob, she's got a knife.
Oh, miss.
And you, Dorcas, you too did not come, did not help me. You too helped me to the drink. Leave this house. Leave this cursed place. No one will hurt you. No harm will come to you. Leave while some part of your soul remains.
Dearest.
Do not think that I will not plunge this knife deep into my breast. For what do I have to live for now?
My beloved.
Not a step further, base wretch.
My dearest love.
Base, cruel man. Out of my way.
The door's firmly shut, madam. You'll not get out the front. And who cares whether you plunge that knife into your heart? Don't think the rest of us do.
Dear love.
Stand aside. Not one step nearer.
Don't be silly, Bob. She'll do it.
I won't have no death here. No officers, please. Let her pass.
Please, my very life.
Bob, let her pass.
Oh, miss.
What if anyone heard her? She'll have the law on her ship, Bob. Why did you bring her here? She's been nothing but trouble.
She said the law. Can we be done for something, can we, Mrs. Sinclair? Because I ain't done nothing.
She'll be the death of us and my business. And the death of you, Bob, with all her law talk. Here, the best to be rid of her. Hit her on the head and bury her in the garden.
Say that again.
Take her in. Help me, Bob. I was only having a joke.
Let her go, Bob! You're killing her, she can't breathe!
You touch a hair on her head, and I'll be the death of you.
Let her go, Bob!
She's going, Bob!
Not a hair! You understand me? A hair! Just a hair of my beloved is worth 1,000 of any of you!
Are you hurt?
Of course I'm not!
Let me help you up.
I don't need no help. Get off me, Sally!
It's not my fault! I didn't have anything to do with any of it.
He's gone mad with her, ain't he, Mrs. Sinclair? Gone mad. And then made the house go mad too, all of us. Is it what he's done? It's what he's done to her, isn't it?
Oh, help me up, Dorcas. There's a dear. Oh. Pass me the brandy.
Was I lucky not to be loved then?
Oh, here, Dorcas, you have a drink too.
I think it's a terrible thing to be so beautiful. Don't you think, Mrs. Sinclair? It's a dreadful, terrible thing.
Dear Jack, I have arrived at Lord Montague's. The old blusterer clings on to life, as ever, and there is a much expected recovery. I await the outcome for the poor gouty fellow. Now, Belford, I will have you attend Miss Harlow. See if you can use persuasion on my part with her. Find agreement and forgiveness within her heart, and then I will leave Lord M, ill though he is, and meet her at her appointed church. Surely the world will acquit me if I do marry her. Is not the catastrophe of every story that ends in wedlock accounted happy? Oh, but hark at me. I am so engrossed in the lady while Lord M suffers the dreadfulest of agonies. Heaven relieve him soon. See, I too have a compassionate heart. Your friend, Robert Lovelace.
Robert, I am at Mrs. Sinclair's writing to you as you requested.
though I am loath to be any part of your stratagem unless you do intend to wed the misused lady. She remains in her room and continues to refuse food. I write to you from the parlour. Come in.
She took my coat.
Who did?
She took my coat. It's got a hood on it.
Who took your coat?
I didn't mean anything to happen.
What has happened, Dorcas?
I don't know how to tell you, Mr. Belford. You won't hit me, will you?
No.
Mr. Lovelace is a violent man.
I won't hit you, Dorcas. Tell me what has happened.
Miss, she took my coat. They thought it was me leaving.
Who did?
Sally and Mrs. Sinclair. They don't know yet. Will you tell them?
Tell them what?
She's gone, Mr. Belford. She's gone off.
Ah. Did you run out? Did you look for a coachman? Did you ask?
Yes. No one saw her. They don't know where she's gone. Will you tell Sally and Mrs. Sinclair?
Yes.
They'll hit me, Mr. Belford.
I'll tell them no one will hit you.
And you'll tell Mr. Lovelace?
I will.
It's a good thing she's gone, isn't it, Mr. Belford? Though nothing will stop him, will it?
No.
She'll never be happy, will she? It'll never stop pursuing her. Not till she's dead in her grave. And I helped him. I helped him too. I know what it's like, you know, when men... Well, when men... I know it.
Know what, Dorcas?
When men... And I helped him do that to her. That what takes away the self. There'll be no end to this wickedness, will there, Mr. Belford? No end. And I'm a part of it as much as Sally is, as much as Mrs. Sinclair. I've done his wickedness too, haven't I, Mr. Belford, haven't I?
Dorcas.
I helped him. All I could see was how beautiful she was. And how she had all those graces. All those graces you can get. I don't have no graces, Mr. Belford. No graces and no kindness. I'll go to hell, won't I, Mr. Belford? Won't I? Less than nothing.
May heaven take its vengeance on the most abandoned and profligate of men. My dearest Clarissa, your letter shocks me. How you have suffered. On closer examination, the false letters I have been sent are of course not your hand, and the letter I sent to you, telling you of the false Captain Tomlinson and the nature of the wretched house you were in, has never arrived. I have written to Charlotte and Lady B, and they inform me that they have not met you, and they confirm your fears that both women were indeed impostors. They are horrified by their nephew's actions. I will visit shortly, upon my return from a brief stay on the Isle of Wight at Lord Horton's. My mother has not been well, and it is thought some sea air might aid her. But I will be with you as soon as I can, my dear and precious friend. I am worried for you. Be careful when you venture out. I fear you will never be safe so long as the villain Lovelace remains on these shores. Your ever affectionate Anna.
You must find her, Jack. Immediately. Your impatient friend, Robert Lovelace.
Dear lady. Oh, you are paler still, dear miss. No, no, don't stand. You stay where you are. I hope you don't mind my intrusion. A gentleman came. He came with all your things from a bad house, he says, belonging to a wicked woman. I brought two letters, miss, that have arrived for you. The gentleman...
Mr. Belford?
Yes, that is his name, miss. He was anxious that I brought them. Here. Oh,
thank you, Mrs. Smith.
The gentleman is outside.
Is he?
He won't come in.
They're from my friend, Mrs. Smith. These letters. My one true and good friend. Oh, don't cry, miss. You're amongst friends now, miss.
Am I? I think it is so long since I have been among friends.
Mr. Belford says that on his word, what was it now, Mr. Lovell?
Loveless.
Oh, that is the name. Well, he will not bother you no more. Mr. Belford says that on his honour, on his word, this man shall not trouble your dear self any more. That's what he says.
How do I know that to be the truth, Mrs. Smith?
Well, I don't suppose you do know. But I think the man's word is good. And so does my Mr. Smith. And Mr. Smith is a very good judge of the characters of others. I do not know you. But it seems to me there is a great weight on your heart and mind. And I do wish you would stay in our humble home so I can, if I'm not being too forward, miss, help a young lady like yourself, who it seems to me is worthy of better things and better days. Oh, miss, I didn't wish to make you cry again. Come, let me support you. There. You steady on your feet.
Thank you, Mrs. Smith. Thank you.
Dearest Anna, thank you for your last letter. I am a little restored, although my health remains fragile. Mr. and Mrs. Smith look after me kindly and with gentle concern. I had forgotten good people exist, for it is so long since I have been in their company, and every day I thank God for his graciousness in delivering me to this household. My mind, too, begins to strengthen, and I think perhaps I might be superior to my calamities, though I have sinking sometimes when I consider my own family. I have written to them, but they do not respond. But I charge you, my dear friend, that my sufferings do not sit too heavy upon your own mind. You tell me of a ball that you are invited to at Lord Horton's, and how you are uncertain to attend as I am ill. You must never let my unhappiness be your unhappiness. So for my sake, dress with all beauty and care for all to admire. Adieu, my dearest love. But I shall write again soon. Clarissa.
Well, not as yet.
Not as yet.
You see, it was the right choice to come, Anna.
A night away from your cares.
And looking so lovely.
What's he doing here?
Oh, Anna, Loveless. And there, Miss Lloyd laughs with him. Do they not know the predator in their midst? He is coming towards us. I will not speak to him. I will not.
Miss Howe?
Charming Miss Howe.
Vilest of men. I abhor you from my soul. I abhor you, vilest, vilest creature.
You can call me nothing, my dear Miss Howe, so vile as I would call myself. I have been indeed the very vilest of men. I have behaved as a villain to the most excellent woman in the world.
You have. You have indeed.
But Miss Howe, you will allow that a faulty person may see his errors, and when he does and owns them and repents, should he not be treated mercifully? A moment's audience, please, madam, for your dear friend's sake.
Listen to him, Anna, and then we'll be rid of him.
Indeed you shall, sir.
Speak then.
I know Lady Betty. My cousin Charlotte and Lord M are engaged on my behalf with the dear lady. You must have heard from her by now. I hope you have. And will you be so good as to tell me if I have any hopes?
Let me tell you that you have broken her heart. You do not know the value of the lady you have injured. You do not deserve her, and she despises you as she ought.
Dear Miss Howe, please do not mingle your righteous anger with denunciations so severe. I must know my fate. I will go abroad if I find her resolute, but I hope she will give me leave to visit her, to hear my fate, from her own mouth.
It would be the death of her to see you. She is frail and ill. You have made her so, sir. You have near destroyed her with your baseness and cruelty. All her family and friends made enemies. The house of iniquity you imprisoned her in, and her public arrest. She is ill and would rather die than have you, sir.
Miss Howe, your admonishments are good and right. I deserve no less. I know I am not worthy of her, but live in the one hope that she may yet, as a Christian, find compassion for a retrograde that admires her still and would marry her if she would have me. It is indeed the fondest hope and the heartfelt wish of all my family. She is my dearest life. This woman we both love. Without her, there is no life. Goodbye, and thank you for your frankness and your time, Miss Howe.
Farewell, Mr. Lovelace.
And may happiness always be yours.
Why do you both look at me?
The man is broken.
Yes.
As he should be.
Will you give him no hope?
It piques him.
What does?
That she still denies him, and piques him still more that he has to beg to me.
Could not his reformation bring the happiness she's looked for? She must have cared for it once.
Well, it is better that she marry him, if all that is talked about is true. He seems a sad fellow now.
And these are what are left of her things. A hairbrush. Some hairpins. Some linen. She sat here, didn't she? But when she looked into her dressing table mirror, it wasn't what I see. Nowhere near. And look. She's left some ties. Some ties from her bodice. These will do nicely for poor Dorcas. This tie will do very well for poor, ugly Dorcas. And end all the bad things that poor, ugly, stupid Dorcas did. That's it. Climb up. That's it. Stupid, wicked Dorcas. Climb up and tie your ties. Round we go. Round the beam. And round poor Dorcas's stupid, wicked neck. This is the way they tie the hangman's noose. This is the way they tie him.
Dorcas! Where are you? Dorcas!
For that's the last of you, little miss. The last wicked thing you'll ever do.
Dorcas! Oh, dear. Stupid girl. Dorcas.
How is the lady today, Mrs. Smith?
She is bad, sir. Very bad. The good doctor has been and gone. He told her she could be well if she should wish it. But, Mr. Belford, I fear that the damage that has been done to her is too great. And she does not wish herself well.
Ah.
And she being such a very lovely lady, it's hard to watch her fade away. She writes to her family, you say a good family.
Indeed.
But no letters come back. What kind of people can let such a gentlewoman die without word? I fear for them, sir. I fear for their conscience when she is no more.
It's only Mrs. Smith, dear lady, and Mr. Belford. May we beg admittance?
Come in, both.
Oh, you are writing, miss. Do not write. It makes us so tired, sir.
I have to write. So many letters have to be sent, Mrs. Smith.
More to your family?
Mrs. Smith, your concern makes a heavy heart lighter.
Oh, miss.
Oh, Mr. Belford, how are you?
I will leave, if I may, miss. I'm to help Mr. Smith in the shop today.
Please do, Mrs. Smith.
You will come and tell me when you are leaving, sir.
Of course.
Do sit, Mr. Belford. I am writing to my sister.
I thought that you had written before.
Oh, on several occasions. But I write again, in the hope of obtaining a revocation regarding my father. After I left on that night, he cursed me. Such a terrible curse, and it... Well, it seems to me that all that he wished for in that angry moment has come to pass, and that I may well not recover, and...
Please, do not distress yourself.
So, you see, I have to write and write.
I believe your family have been very harsh with you, Miss Harlow.
No, you must not blame them, for they were the best of parents until I disobliged them. And they have reason to be angry with me, for I was rash. I humiliated them. They would have expected more from a child they had doted on, and a child whose education set her apart. And indeed, the only one of us that behaved out of character was myself. And I hope that my cousin, Colonel Morden, will return soon. And perhaps he might reconcile my family with myself, if he is not too late.
I wonder, in forgiveness of your family, you might find it in your heart to extend forgiveness to Robert Lovelace?
Mr. Belford, please, I would not talk of this matter. I would have to ask you to come no more if you pursue this topic.
I see.
Meanwhile, you may let him know that I reject him with my whole heart, and I say that not with passion, but let him know that I am trying to learn to pity him, poor perjured wretch, and what he has got to answer for. Miss Howe, you must know this, suggests I take my case to the law. She does not know that I have not the energy to take a gentle stroll. No more than I could endure the details of such a case in a court of law.
Yes, of course.
But let us talk of other things. Tell me of the autumn leaves in the park, and the low-lying sun that brings a golden light to a morning's walk.
Ah, yes. But I need to tell you...
Nothing regarding that man, Mr. Belford.
No. I have heard that Dorcas? Mrs. Sinclair found the poor wretch yesterday. Quite dead. She hanged herself from remorse and shame.
Oh, that is such sad news. She was the only one who showed me any gentleness in that house. Dear girl.
Dear Jack, Lord M, still alive but languishing in pain. You write to say Clarissa will not see me, that it would be the death of her. Surely a visit from a friend cannot hasten anyone's death. I am confident that my charming frost peace will revive, that nature will triumph over principle, and that she will, one day, bear me a young Lovelace, and such a cherub my son will be. I must come to town, for how the country bores me, and will have an interview with the charmer myself. Yours, Robert.
You must not come, Robert. I have given my word that you will not trouble her. She is far too frail for your presence. Out of respect for the injuries you have already inflicted, do not seek her out.
Can I help you, sir?
Indeed, madam. You have a lady, I believe, that lodges with you in rooms above these premises. A Miss Harlow?
I have, sir.
And is she in? I would see her.
I think the young lady would not see you, sir.
But she is in.
She will not see you, I think, sir.
You know who I am?
I can guess, sir.
I will go up.
You may not.
I will.
She is not here.
I don't believe you, madam.
Is she hiding? Is she behind your counter? Have you hidden her?
No, sir, I have told you. She is not here.
How do you know who I am?
There cannot be two of you, sir.
By knowing me, do you know me as bad or good, as ugly or handsome?
I leave that for you to say, sir.
Where is she?
I do not know. She went out this morning, sir.
Don't tell fibs, Mrs. Smith. Is it Mrs. Smith? I am sure you know.
I do not lie, sir.
What is sold here, Dame Smith?
Powder and washballs and snuff and gloves and stockings, sir.
I would care for two washballs, Dame Smith.
I will have to come back behind the counter, sir, where you are standing now, if I am to serve you.
Well, then I shall serve you, Dame Smith.
My husband will be back shortly, sir. I do not care for games, sir.
1 dozen washballs, Dame Smith.
Pray, sir, walk from behind the counter.
Indeed I won't. This shop will be mine. Now, Dame Smith, where are your gloves?
My husband will be back very soon.
Would he play shops with me, Dame Smith?
No. He will have none of your games, sir.
Oh, but I'm deadly serious, Mrs. Smith. I would learn your trade.
He is a big man, sir, my husband. A very capable man.
Am I to be afraid of him, madam?
I'm not saying that you would be, sir. But he has tackled all manner of rogues, and none yet have laid hands on him.
Am I a rogue, Mrs. Smith?
That is not what I said, sir.
Would you buy 3 pairs of gloves from me? And an ounce of snuff? Or maybe I will take the snuff for myself. She almost broke my heart by her cruelty. Well, then I expect you know the whole story, Mrs. Smith. I ask for 1 half-hour conversation with her to know my fate, and if she cannot forgive me, I intend to set out for Dover. Oh, your snuff is excellent. More gloves, Mrs. Smith, or washballs.
I have no education to talk of, nor graces, nor cleverness. But it seems a great waste to me, sir, to use all that cleverness against those that do no harm.
No gloves then, Mrs. Smith.
What is the worth of cleverness? Without compassion, it has no purpose to my mind,
oh,
sir.
You are a wit, indeed, Mrs. Smith.
I see nothing funny in what I say, sir. Oh, see Mr. Smith at the end of the street. I thought he'd never come home.
I will go, Mrs. Smith. Thank you for the snuff. Oh, and here are some pennies for your trouble. I'll go not because of your husband's arrival, or because of his prowess with rogues, but because I believe he will not play shops with me. But you will see me again. Good day, Mrs. Smith.
How is she, Mrs. Smith?
Worse. Much worse, Mr. Belford. That man Lovelace. Forgive me, sir. I know he's a friend of yours.
Mm.
I had to stop Mr. Smith from going after him when he heard how he'd been with me.
I am doing everything in my power to prevent him from coming again, Mrs. Smith.
She goes out all day to avoid him, and it will be the certain death of her, moving from here to there, sitting in cold, damp churches. You must stop him, Mr. Belford.
Indeed.
But it is her family's indifference that have broken her heart still further. Her gentle heart. They do not relent. Mr. Belford, she is all grace and kindness. How can such a creature deserve such sufferings?
And Colonel Morden, has he arrived? I was told he had returned.
No, sir. She's had no visitors. Apart from that wicked man. Forgive me, I forget he is your friend. I cannot reconcile the friendship of such a good and considerate man such as yourself to a man such as that.
Hmm.
I speak out of turn. But he will kill her yet, making her move from place to place when she can barely walk without a helping hand. What a cruel man he is, Mr. Belford. A cruel, cruel man.
Mm.
Belford! Belford, sit, sit. You came. I've given up all hope. Here, have some wine. It's not good wine, but it is wine.
No, I don't want any.
Oh, Jack, dear fellow. Jack, dear fellow. How I've missed you. Come here, let me hug you heartily.
Get off me, Lovelace, you drunkard.
Oh, well, would you not be drunkard as you call me drunkard if you had lost all that you love? If maybe I should love you, Belford, and then all will be well. Ah, but then I do love you. There is one advantage that we male delinquents have over that other sex. For while they, poor things, sit sighing in pits and things...
Pits?
Oh, you know, pits. Holes and corners.
Corners?
Oh, you know, places that ladies cry in. I don't know. Woods, cupboards, wherever they cry. Well, while they are crying in woods or cupboards, we men are out ranting, roaring, hunting and hawking, and by new loves banish the old from our heart.
Oh, yes.
On reflection, and I do reflect, Jack, upon the injuries done to the noble creature, for she is noble, you see now, eh? Noble. Hmm? Yes, the injuries done to her bring qualm upon my heart often. But not in a cupboard.
Oh, Lovelace.
Oh, what? Cheer up, Jack. Where's the Jack of old? Hey, are we not still friends?
You must leave her be. She goes out when her health is already so frail, when she has no strength. She goes out, Robert, so as not to see you. It will kill her.
Well, then, we must drink to her health, Jack. Here. If she was so ill, she would not leave at all, Jack. Come on, Jack, you make fun of me. Let us drink to my happy reconciliation with the lady, for I know she will permit me to make amends after she has plagued me heartily, no doubt, and that is my consolation. To Miss Harlow, Jack. To the excellent Miss Harlow.
My dearest Clarissa, my mother has been ill. It's a violent fever, and the doctors are doubtful for her. It was arranged that I would leave shortly and be with you the day after tomorrow. But she did not sleep last night, and coughed and sweated throughout, and although we have always had our differences, I cannot bear to leave her side. I will be with you as soon as she mends. Your cousin, Colonel Morden, has just left me. You know my feelings on your family's conduct, and of course on the villain himself, and I shared those heartfelt views with the Colonel. He was particularly outraged by the treatment you have received by your brother James and sister Bella, but more so by the conduct of your parents. He is making haste to see you at your lodgings. At last there is a member of your family that is beyond the cunning of James and Bella. He will be with you shortly. Write and tell me how you are. Tell me you are well. Tell me you are recovering, my dearest friend. Your Anna.
Lovelace, the lady remains exceedingly weak and ill. Her intellects, nevertheless, continue to be strong and clear, and her piety and patience are without example. Everyone thinks this night will be her last. Every day I hate you more. John Belford.
I don't want to disturb her.
Oh, sir, I am just so pleased that one of her family is here. Yes, she is tired, and we think near... Forgive me, sir. The lady has touched my heart. And her story, sir, is so wrong. It is so wrong how she's been treated in the world.
I would have returned earlier had I known the full gravity of what has passed.
Is Mr. Belford with her?
Yes, sir. He has been a true friend, sir.
Yes, I have heard.
How is she?
Sleeping.
Colonel Morton, sir.
John Belford. My kinswoman, sir, is more obliged to you than any of her own family. For my own part, I have been endeavouring to move many rocks in her favour, not knowing the dear creature so very bad. I should have attended her as soon as I arrived. Would she see me now?
I will go and ask, sir.
Where am I? How drowsy I am. Mrs. Smith? Mm. Oh, the good Mrs. Smith. I believe all your kind efforts will be over soon, Mrs. Smith. Oh, I have slept, but I am not refreshed.
Oh, my dear.
Cousin.
Oh, my dear child. No, you must not get up. No, let me lift you. Yes. Clarissa.
And Mr. Belford.
Dear lady.
How kind you both are to come and see me. Oh, cousin. Oh, cousin. Promise me. Give me your hand. You must not heighten my own fault by seeking to avenge my death. Promise me there will be no further mischief. Cousin.
I will.
You must not seek Mr. Lovelace out. Mr. Belford.
Yes, dear lady.
You must tell your friend that I find I can indeed forgive him, because I am so close to eternal peace. Do not mourn me, dear friends. I will soon be free of this world. There is such wonder. We will all see this wonder together one day. Forgive me. Let me sleep, and then perhaps...
Oh, Miss Harlan. Oh, dear miss.
Dear cousin.
Yes. A great wonder.
Curse upon her family. Curse upon you, the writer of this letter, Belford, pretending to be as much interested in my Clarissa's fate as myself. She is mine, and only mine. Her cursed family and their treatment of her lost the right to her. Does not her forgiveness signify that I am the chosen of her heart? Send me a lock of her hair this night. She shall be buried in the chapel at Lord M's. She is mine, and will always be mine. I will be with you by tomorrow. Adieu, Robert Lovelace.
Dear Mr. Belford, I write to you in the memory of my dear friend. You have asked me to send you details of the funeral and of her family. Mr. Lovelace did not, as we had feared, attend, for what violence might have arisen had he done so. She now lies at peace in the Harlow crypt. As we both now know, there were letters of reconciliation and letters of forgiveness from her family sent before her sad death, but none reached her before that tragic hour. And so the grief that the family share is much greater in the knowledge that my dear friend did not read the letters from her sister, from her mother, and never knew that her father's curse had been lifted. I do not believe her mother's heart will ever recover. Her brother James has retired, I believe, in shame, to his estates in Scotland. And Bella weeps, I am told, day and night for her sister, and the injuries she inflicted. The skittish Betty, her maid, has left the Harlow home of her own volition. The death of such a woman affects us all, even the worst of us. Her last letter urges me to be content without her, and to be happy. But a life without such a friend will be very hard. And although she forgives me for not attending her, it will take time for me to forgive myself. I did not realize, perhaps could not conceive, the possibility of losing my beloved friend. I know it amongst her dying wishes that no vengeance should be taken on the man, your friend, that ruined her. Colonel Morden has gone abroad, perhaps to avoid such action. I do not know what is to become of the villain. Justice is in God's hands, and God sees all. You have been a true friend to Miss Clarissa Harlowe, and I will be indebted to you always, Mr. Belford. You will always have a place in my heart. Anna Howe.
Well, this is the boat. Good friend, I thought from your last angry communication not to see you again. But there, we still see eye to eye on many things. You also have a rake's heart, Jack, and once you have one, it cannot be lost.
Can it not, indeed?
No. Oh, so serious, Jack. Say you forgive me.
I'm here, am I not?
And Miss Howe?
What of her?
You will see her again, no doubt. I once had plans to seduce them both. Did I never say?
No.
Well, no longer. Here. Hug me, though, Belford, for I know not when I will see you again.
There. Hugged.
The good Lord will take all of your humour, Jack, if you trouble him too much with your newfound honour. Once a rake, always a rake. Adieu, my beloved friend.
Adieu.
Where did you say Colonel Morden was?
Rennes. Brittany.
Where?
Rennes. Don't go there.
Colonel Morden.
You have found me. I was determined to obey her last wishes. That no vengeance be sought for her sake. That it would end there, with the angel's untimely and undeserved death. But you, Lovelace, have sought me out.
I have.
You give me no choice, sir. Time?
Tomorrow. Place?
The edge of the woodland. The jeweller's spot. And the weapon of your preference, sir?
I believe we might be on equal footing with the single rapier. I will, however, be equally satisfied with the pistol.
I have not missed a shot yet, sir. So let us say the rapier.
Agreed. Tomorrow at 3.
Agreed.
Sir, I have some melancholy news to inform you. I believe you are acquainted with a Monsieur Robert Lovelace and a Colonel Morden. The former put me in the service of writing to you to describe in full details of the duel. The two chevaliers came at exactly the same time. They approached, and having exchanged courtesies with the drop of Rouban, they began. Monsieur Lovelace was the first to draw blood, wounding Colonel Morden in the fleshy part of the ribs. But no sooner had his sword been withdrawn than Colonel Morden's rapier sliced into my chevalier's shoulder, raking his breast as it passed. There followed a great effusion of blood.
It's nothing. It's a scratch. We continue, Colonel Morden. We continue. It was a pinprick.
A chevalier took to his feet and launched himself unwisely at Colonel Morden, who spun around and ran my dear chevalier through the body.
The luck is yours, sir.
You are a dead man, sir. Let me help you.
Your work here is done, sir. And I'm thankful that I die at the hands of a man of honour.
Command yourself to God, sir.
He did not die immediately. The bleeding continued for 2 nights and could not be abated. He was delirious at times and cried out on several occasions.
Take her away. Take her away!
But named? No one. At 9 on the second day, he was seized by convulsions and fainted away, but it was still a quarter of an hour before he came to his end. He seemed most unwilling to die and appeared to be in great anguish in both his heart and mind. Then, as he lifted his eyes to heaven,
"Blessed!"
he shouted,
"Blessed!"
Then he spoke inwardly, and I could not decipher his words until his last moment, when, in great pain, he said,
Let this
expiate.
Expiate.
Then his head sunk on his pillow, where he expired. With some difficulty I am returning his embowelled body to England. He had refused the sacraments. May his soul be happy.
In Clarissa by Samuel Richardson, Clarissa Harlow was played by Zoe Waits, Robert Lovelace, Richard Armitage, Sally, Sophie Thompson, Dorcas, Lisa Hammond, and Belford was Adrian Scarborough. Mrs. Sinclair was Miriam Margulies, Anna, Kathy Sarah, Mrs. Smith, Linda Broughton, Colonel Morden, Julian Ryan Tutt, and F.J. de la Tour was Stephen Critchlow. Other parts were played by members of the company. Clarissa was adapted by Hattie Naylor, directed by Marilyn Imrie, and is a Catherine Bailey production for BBC Radio 4.
We've Russian drama tomorrow with Oblomov, a story that took a decade to write and whose hero is considered the greatest couch potato in literature. Toby Jones stars at the same time.
Classic comedy on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Yes, well, thank you, Mr. Spriggs, yes. I'm sure it's a very reasonable quote, but I'm afraid we can't possibly afford £85 just to refloor the ladies' lavatory. I'm sorry, but we'll have to make other arrangements. Pardon? Yes, you're quite right. So will the ladies. Thank you. Goodbye. He wants £85, Bert.
Yeah, I heard. Blimey, £85 just to spend a penny.
Couldn't we charge the ladies a bit more and get the money back that way?
Don't be daft, Parky. You can't have people saying, "I won't be a moment. I'm just going to spend a sixpence."
No, I suppose not. Still, I'll get it. Hello? Frambourne Pier, Mr. Pike, the co-owner, speaking. Oh, hello, Mum. No, Uncle Arthur's not here yet. No, we're expecting him about half an hour. No, well, I'm sorry we didn't get back for lunch today, but we've been ever so busy. We've been having a lot of trouble with the ladies. No, Mum, the ladies' toilet. Look, I said I'm sorry, and I'm sure Uncle Arthur is as well. No, I've no idea what you can do with leftover liver. Well, I don't think Uncle Arthur...